everyone, and welcome. This is Bobby Laporte, CEO of Bobby Laporte & Associates and host of the Executive Aid Station. In today's competitive and dynamic executive marketplace, we believe that leadership is an endurance event, and we are here to provide the support that today's leaders need. Our show guests in general are executives who've successfully achieved a balanced life, as well as experts in fitness, health and wellness, and personal leadership, who share their strategies for living and leading mindfully. Today, however, the tables are going to be turned. My good friend and coach, Gary Parise, who has been a guest on the Executive Aid Station podcast, is actually going to be interviewing me. And the reason why we decided to do that today is that as I approach the training and getting ready for my next Ironman, I've been reflecting back on my journey over the last decade and the things that I've learned and the lessons that I've shared with many of you, and so I thought it might be helpful to revisit and reflect upon that. And Gary's been generous enough to offer to be the interviewer today, so I'm very pleased to have him on the podcast. I'm very privileged to have him interviewing me. So with that, Gary, I will turn it over to you, and thank you again for being here today.
And what a pleasure it's going to be, Bobby, to turn the tables on you. But first of all, we've got to change chairs. So if you'll come over to my chair, and I'm going to go over to your chair.
All right, I'm moving chairs.
Okay, and I'm going to put you in the hot seat today. So I think we really need to start with the basics. In terms of Ironman, has this been a lifelong pursuit of yours? Or is this a recent phenomenon for you?
Well, it certainly hasn't been a lifelong pursuit by any means. This has been something I started, oh, it's probably been maybe 12, 13 years now. I like to tell people that I became an endurance athlete at a mature age. So it was in the probably like 2005, 2006, when I was running a tech startup in Silicon Valley and was super busy traveling, wasn't really paying much attention, taking much care of myself. I'm not an athlete growing up. And one of the people that was working for me decided to train for a marathon, and I kind of got involved in his process. And then I became intrigued about the possibility of sort of evolutionizing yourself through sport, through an endurance sport. So I decided to take that opportunity and train for a marathon, and that turned into another marathon and then into a short-distance triathlon, and then at some point someone challenged me to train for Ironman, which I just thought was totally unachievable and way beyond my expectations. And that was the first one, and so now I'm getting ready for number seven.
So number seven, that's incredible. When I think of and even walking out the front door, I can think of about six other things that I really need to do instead of exercising. And you're into number seven in the Ironman competitions. It's that motivation. Where do you get that from?
Well, you're right about the fact that there's so many other things that compete for your attention. And I think for me, you know, part of the motivation is just kind of the journey and the self-knowledge that I've gained from this process, which is part of the platform that I use today when I work with executives or I do consulting in organizations. Because as I mentioned earlier, I did not grow up as an athlete. I think many people who are endurance athletes, and particularly people who are in later life, you know, are doing the kinds of races that I am, they had some sort of athletic experience when they were younger. They were in a college, a high school team or college team, and I didn't have any proclivities or interest in sports growing up other than spectator sports, so I never did anything. So the fact that I made this major shift in my 50s, it motivates me to continue to see what are the possibilities, what else can I do, what else can I possibly achieve, how can I push myself a little bit more. So some of the motivation comes from just the experience of somebody, coaches and trainers and people around me saying, you can do this, you can do more, you can go faster, you can be stronger, you can do another one. That's a big part of my motivation is my little mini village that helps me train and get ready for these events. I think the other part of it is that, as I said, I use what I've learned and try to apply it to the work that I've done, because as I said in the opening, I believe that particularly here where we live in Silicon Valley, leadership is an endurance event, and so many of the people I work with and like people you work with are like stressed and strained and overworked and overwhelmed, and so trying to help them see how they can navigate through those kind of circumstances, how they manage themselves, you know, more for, as we say, a marathon, not a sprint, how they build resilience and discipline. Those are all lessons that I learned as an endurance athlete, and I feel like I have to be able to walk the talk, right? So I can't say to them, well, this is what you should do, when I'm not still doing some of that myself. So that's where, for me anyway, that's where the motivation comes from. Mm-hmm. At some point, I'm not going to be able to continue to do long-distance races. Hopefully I'll always do some. But it's really about continuing to see what I can do, and then from those lessons that I'm continuing to learn, how do I support the people that I'm working with?
Sure. So we hear consistently sports analogies when we're in our business lives, reaching for that goal, running that race. But really, there, what you're alluding to, I think, is that there are specific lessons that you've learned from the Ironman training and your physical training in general. Is that accurate?
Yes, and you're right. You do see a lot of those sports metaphors that relate to, you know, leadership, and other people have applied those for many, many years. I think that there are some, you know, physical, you know, lessons, I think, in terms of just being strong and building resiliency and that kind of endurance that I talked about that I think, you know, many executives need today. So there's that element of it. But I think even more importantly, the lessons that I've learned were more about self-awareness and self-knowledge and about understanding what my capabilities really are that I wasn't aware of, but also seeing what my vulnerabilities were. I mean, what are my weaknesses? And understanding that, I might not be able to overcome those. So I might just be able to really leverage the strengths I have. And with those gaps or vulnerabilities in my repertoire, you know, as an athlete, you know, how do I get other people to help with those? So who can I call on to support? So it's more, I think, about the mindset of an endurance athlete, that you're managing yourself through a long process. There's highs and there's lows, and you try not to get too high or too low. You try to moderate your sort of temperament and your ability to kind of see the end and not so much get so excited about what happened today or this week, but really be looking in the long term, looking at the goal. It's having the discipline to really stay the course. It's the consistency of behaviors and habits and actions that you put in place. I think those are the, even beyond the physical ones, those are the more important lessons that I've learned that I find really are resonating with the executives that I work with, and the metaphors are helpful for them, but then they're also able to really put those practices into play and really help themselves deal with some of the challenges they have being a leader in this crazy workplace that we're all living in today.
Sure. But when you're talking about vulnerabilities and resilience and capabilities, that really takes time, doesn't it? Don't we have to almost put the brakes on? Isn't that what you're suggesting there, that maybe this endurance race we're in needs to pause every once in a while?
That's an excellent way to put it. It's actually, well, one of the things that I'm trying to instill more in the executives that I work with today is just that. I mean, it's really what some people call the lost art of reflection. Kind of, we're losing our inner selves to this 24/7 wired world that we live in. And so I think, yes, as being in my athletic journey, I did have to, and our coaches actually forced us to do this, to really sit and pause and reflect on, you know, what have I accomplished? What could I do differently? How could I manage myself better? And so that is one of the things that I'm suggesting to people that I work with, is that, you know, you can't be triple booked and running 24/7 and multitasking and thinking that you're being effective. It's actually just the opposite. You really build much more perspective. You build a broader portfolio of behaviors that you can draw on. You actually build cognitive capabilities and other capabilities to be more effective by actually stopping and pausing and reflecting and sitting and thinking and observing and trying to be much more cognizant of what's happening so that you can make a measured and considered response to the particular situations you're in. You know, otherwise, you're just going for the sake of going. And even with talented athletes who have a very specific, they have the discipline, they have a schedule, they know exactly every day what they're going to be doing, it still requires time to really sit back and think and pause and reflect on the journey. So that, as you suggested, that very important pause is a really key element, I think, and a capacity that I think is really important for executives to build. But it's really challenging because everybody just feels like there's no time to do that. But there's no time not to do it. Anyway, that's the way I
do it. So do you recommend, because I'm envisioning closing the door on my office every once in a while so nobody can come in, so I can have that moment to pause and reflect on some of these competencies that I need, like looking at my capabilities, looking at my vulnerabilities, right, my resilience. What are some of the suggestions about just putting the brakes on? How do I do that?
Well, I mean, I think there are definitely, there are specific things, like you suggested, where you can actually, you know, say close the door, which sometimes is challenging for people. I sometimes suggest to people you just take, like, a couple of minutes in the middle of the day, maybe like middle of the day, you just stop and think, what were my intentions today about what I wanted to accomplish? How did I want to show up as a leader? Am I being the person and doing that I said I was going to be? Am I doing the things that I want to be? And if you can take 5 minutes in the middle of the day and just reflect back upon that and then course correct and say, okay, so I could have handled that better. This afternoon, going forward, I'm going to do the following. So you can actually take some time, and, you know, there's different exercises that you can focus on that, like, help you to build, like, a 3 or 4 minute reflective exercise like that in the middle of your day. I know some executives that when they drive home at night, that's one of the first exercises they do, or if they're on the train or the ferry or whatever, they think about, what did I do well today? What could I have done better? Who did I treat well? Who did I not treat well? What am I going to do differently tomorrow? So I think if you can build those little moments of reflection into your day, it doesn't have to be like I'm taking an hour to sit down and meditate. I mean, there's definitely people who have more formal meditation and mindfulness practices, but I don't think it takes that much. It just takes intention, and it takes thoughtfulness to be able to build some small amounts of time that just gives you that space that you can reflect.
And I think that your use of the word intention, to do it intentionally, I think it's extremely important.
Right, exactly. I mean, and that's what I think a lot of us who are 24/7, triple, I mean, all that kind of, there's not a lot of intentionality in your day. You might have it in the beginning, but then your day quickly spins out of control when you get into the office and all these things happen, and all of a sudden it's 6 o'clock, and what did I do, and where have I been, and what did I accomplish? And you leave feeling very unsatisfied and unfulfilled. And so whatever methodology you can use that will help you to, like, pause, reflect, and then just plan the rest of your day, or plan what you're going to do in this next meeting, or how are you going to, you know, have a conversation with someone. Even simple things like before you go to a meeting, and I have this practice that I suggest to clients called arriving, which is basically, you know, when you're running down the hall and you're 3 minutes late and you kind of slide into the conference room and everybody's already there, people are already late and they're on their laptops and you're like, okay, end of the meeting, and what did I do in this last one? What am I here for? If you can take 15 seconds, and that's all it takes, to just arrive, it's just calm yourself down, walk in, sit wherever you are, and just take that 15 seconds to just take a deep breath, be present at the table and think, all right, What are my goals for this meeting? What am I trying to accomplish? What's the most important thing for me to take away from here? How do I need to show up? And it just gives you that, again, that space and that intentionality to help you be your best, which is what, you know, everybody is striving for.
I hope that everyone who is listening to our conversation today will just rewind the last couple of minutes, because I think those are excellent suggestions. And I think they need to hear those and rehear exactly what you've been talking about. There's another thing that you alluded to that I think is extremely important, and that's the people in your life. You said your mini little community. The title of this podcast is Executive Aid Station. Tell me about Executive Aid Stations.
The concept of Executive Aid Station came from, actually, and you were a big part of this, when you helped me to develop the keynote that I give to organizations around my Ironman journey. One of the pillars of that talk is about your aid station, and I tell a story about one of my sort of seminal training rides, how there's different aid stations along, and how the people there on those aid stations really banded together in a very conspiratorial way that I didn't know of at the time to help me get through that really critical training ride and then get me ready for my first Ironman. And so here I am now training for number 7. So I use that metaphor to talk to people about, you know, where is your executive aid station? And so the podcast and the newsletter and the other things that are branded around executive aid station really talk about the fact that leadership is an endurance event and that everybody needs support. And that's one of the things that we're trying to provide here through this podcast and through some of the other media that we use. But I think that we all need support of different kinds, and I think sometimes we fall into this hero trap where, like, well, I'm a senior executive and people, you know, I don't need to depend on anybody, or I can't let people know that I need support or that I need help or that I'm not completely ready. So this podcast and other things are designed to provide some insights and tips and techniques to help executives be able to manage themselves differently so that they can achieve personal professional success. But it's also to help instill a mindset around we all need support. We all have to have an aid station. So where is that? Is it a mentor? Is it a peer? Is it a former colleague? Is it a group of people? I think the more we think about who are the people in our world that can help us to be successful and that we're willing to be vulnerable enough to reach out to them and say, look, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. I know I can't complete this journey on my own. I need help. Can you help me do the following? That's frankly one of the things that I learned when I trained for my first Ironman, is that I would never have been successful without all the people who were part of the aid station on all of our training rides and at the race, my family, my trainer, my massage therapist. I mean, it's really, like, at this point in my career, really, so it takes a village to get me ready for one of these races. But I think we all need support, and it's just a way for people to acknowledge and to think about who can I reach out to, who would be willing to be engaged in my success and be able to help me.
And doesn't the concept of we need to do it all, we need to have all of the answers, that's a bygone era, is it not?
I think so. And mm-hmm. Some of it I think might be generational. I definitely think there's some people, you know, older people who are, well, older executives, people who have been around for a long time, who maybe feel that they can't admit that they need help or that they need support. But I agree with you. I think for the most part that is not a current thinking. I would hope that most people believe that they do need support. However, look where we live, but not just where we live, but look at the competitive environment that we operate in. And you know, in the Silicon Valley, it's the ultimate, sometimes it's the ultimate rat race. And I think that people sometimes are afraid to say, look, if I reach out to somebody and say, I need help, then that opens the door, a little bit of a crack that says, aha, this person doesn't have it all down. They haven't figured it all out. They're not entirely ready for the next step. And so at the same time, I'm trying to get people to acknowledge that they do need support, and it's a strength to be able to reach out and to be vulnerable enough to ask for support. We're also dealing in an environment where people hesitate to do that because there's five people standing behind them who might want that same opportunity or who are looking to run that project, right, or be considered for XYZ. And so it's a really, I think it's a really fine mm-hmm. line. It's a balancing act.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And in sports, and you've already talked about this, the discipline, the strategy, the focus, the consistency of preparation and getting ready to do all of this. It really, and I want your thoughts, I would really like to hear your thoughts on the idea of just focusing on us and as leaders, our strengths rather than our weaknesses. Give me some of your thoughts on that.
Well, that's definitely something that I learned through my training. One of the kind of advantages, as an example, but also one of the challenges of being a multi-sport athlete. So it's not like you're a runner. You have to really be good at running. So you have three sports. Nobody's great at all of them except the pros. But when you start to train in three sports, you quickly learn, oh, I'm good at this. I'm not so good at this. And you have to really acknowledge where those strengths are and build on those. So let's say that you're not a good swimmer, but you're a really good runner. So you just know that you may invest a little bit of time in improving your swim techniques so that you might be able to gain a few minutes of the race. But you really, really work on and improve and leverage your strengths as a runner because you know, and that's what happened to me in my first race. I started as a runner. I'm not a good swimmer. I'm an okay cyclist, but my supporters who were tracking me online that day during my first race said to me, wow, we could see you online passing people on the run. I mean, you're in like this place, and all of a sudden you're like 30 places up and 50 places up. And so I learned through that process that it's really important to just, you know, focus on your strengths because that's what will get you, I believe, what will get you to the finish line. In a more contemporary sense of that, as you know, last year I completed my master's in positive leadership and strategy from IE in Madrid, and one of the reasons why I enrolled in that program was, number one, because I thought it was an extension of this sort of positive mindset of athletes that I was using and leveraging strengths, but also because it's very much science-based around how positive psychology and the science around that really has demonstrated that strengths can be identified and developed with a much higher impact than the traditional training and development focus we take, where we focus on these are your weaknesses, these are your development areas, here's the gaps. And so that's also now driving a lot of the work I'm doing and informing the coaching and consulting I'm doing. And the science is super powerful, and I'm seeing this really resonate with people and seeing some great results. And so what I learned, going back full circle now, as an athlete, a multi-sport athlete, has now been proven out in this new field of study from science that you can have a much faster, I think, and more effective path to development, whether it's you or your team or an organization, if you approach it based on strengths and values and what you appreciate versus the deficits approach.
Mm-hmm. So if athletes are consistently measuring their successes, and they can measure them. A track star can measure their success by how fast they're going, who they're passing. There's that constant measurement. But as leaders, how do we measure our successes?
I think it's, some of it is personal. It depends on what your goals are, right, and how you measure success for yourself. For most people, I mean, there's always the basic kind of financial measurements, right? You know, are you contributing to the ROI and are you meeting your numbers and all that sort of thing? But I think that for most of the people that I work with and people that I respect, it's really more about how are you creating an environment, right, that is helping people in your life, people on your team, how are you creating an environment that's helping other people excel and be successful. I mean, I think that's the ultimate for me and most of the people that I work with, that's really the measure of success. gone are the days where, you know, the boss was at the top of the organization and he knew best and you had all the answers and you just told people this is what we're going to do. I mean, we live in this crazy, complex, ambiguous, dynamic, constantly changing, increasing demands kind of environment, and no leader really has all the answers. He can't. So I think the goal of today's leaders is really to be more of a context creator. You know, what is the context of the situation we're in? How can I tap into the collective knowledge and wisdom and the expertise of the people in my organization to help solve problems and move the organization forward? And that in turn, and scan their strengths and understand what they're good at, that in turn, I think, helps people to excel and move up and helps them to be successful. So I think the success of others, coming to your question really, for me, and others really, is the measurement of success for today's leaders.
So as we are taking a look at our teams, we should be relying more on their strengths rather than us trying to be 100% accurate in every decision.
Absolutely.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just our environment is way too complicated. So, you know, again, that role, that concept of being a context creator, I think that is really the critical skill and mindset for today's leaders. There's no way you can have all the answers. I mean, there's just too much, there's too much that's changing and there's too much going on. And so the answers come from the people who are in your organization. So how you build trust with them, how you help them tap into their strengths, how you help them help you create the agenda and solve the problems to move the organization forward. I think that's really the answer. But it's a lot harder to do than, it's a lot harder to do than it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot harder to do than it sounds.
Yes. So if we reflect on our conversation today and the points that you've made, which are so valuable to us as leaders, about putting people around us and recognizing their strengths and how that adds to our strengths. And also, if you've heard too many sports metaphors, you can certainly reflect on words like discipline and strategy and consistency, competency, reflecting on your own strengths. You can certainly use those words and leave the sports metaphors out of the conversation. But where I think it really has helped you is in identifying your credibility when you're standing in front of a group or you're coaching somebody one-on-one, because you're there and you walk the talk. And I applaud you for doing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It is one of the things, as you said, what motivates you, that keeps me going every day. I mean, I'm not going to tell how old I am, and I know you know how old I am, but, you know, every day it gets, like I said, and my trainer said, every day I say I get out of bed and I go, wow, that didn't hurt yesterday, but it hurts today. So it is very motivating for me, and I hope that that is one of the values that I can bring to the people that I work with, that I can at least energize them and inspire them and give them some momentum to do whatever. It doesn't have to be some big physical feat, but if I can help them to understand the connection between fitness and career success, as you said, with the physical metaphors, but then also the lessons learned around being a more effective leader in the environment that we operate in, then I'll be very happy about that. I'll have accomplished my goals.
Well, you certainly have accomplished it today, and many thanks, because I feel like I've been at my very own executive aid station today. Thank you for everything you've given us today.
Oh, Gary, you're so generous. Thank you so much. This was fun. It's really a treat to have you interview me. So thank you again for your time today. I really appreciate it. I hope that our listeners enjoy the conversation and some of the insights that I was able to share. So with that, I will, to our listeners, I'll say that's it for today's show. Again, thank you for allowing me to indulge and share some of my lessons learned and insights for all of you. Please visit our website, which is www.bobbylaporte.com, and sign up for our Executive Aid Station updates. And I look forward to sharing our next episode of the Executive Aid Station, so stay tuned for that.